Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, what's good? It's Black Trey, and I got a show called Growing Up the Same with Jason Madison, where we talk to guests about their childhood memories that I'm sure everyone can relate to. You even get some life advice at the end. Our show has featured guests like Dom Kennedy, JJ Redick, Baron Davis, Brian Koppelman, Bomani Jones, Mina Kimes, and many more. Be sure to check us out on the Black Opinions Matter feed under the Count the Dings Network. Oh yeah, and don't forget to tell a friend to subscribe, rate, and review.
And also subscribe, rate, and review to the separate Growing Up the Same feed.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozney Lambre. My man, Nando Vila, is on a Spanish vacation. He's traversing from Madrid to Barcelona to Ibiza. He's doing everything in between. This man is on a jaunt, as they say. So we wish him all the best on his vacation. But luckily for us this week, we have an amazing, wonderful stand-in. My brother, Ben Burgess. What's going on, big dog?
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. This is awesome.
Of course, man. Honestly, you know, this being the one-year anniversary of the passing of our brother, Michael Brooks, and you're somebody who I was fortunate enough to meet through Mike and who I'm proud to say have been able to develop a friendship with because of that connection. I thought it would be a good time to have you on, and we could discuss Mike and his legacy and, you know, the everlasting impact that he left on this earth towards the end of the show. But first, honestly, I wanted to have you on because right now the biggest thing happening in politics is what's going on with this infrastructure bill. Basically, are they going to do it bipartisan with the fake centrist Republicans? Are they just going to ram it down their throats as they should? That which is what the Republicans would do in their the Republicans would be like, let's go out of our way for a compromise with the Dems. They'd be like, oh, we can do this by ourselves. Fuck out of here. That's like, whatever. We'll get into that. But I did want to talk to you because I just, you know, I'm interested to know how you feel as far as how they've gone about selling this thing. Like that day that Joe Biden has his grand press conference in cinema and mansion behind him to almost signal this will be the worst bill possible, right? To, you know, Bernie coming out and being like, listen, man, this thing needs to be $3.5 trillion. And we need to ram a bunch of goodies through this thing for our people. You know, I'm interested to see to hear your thoughts on the delicate dance that these guys have been playing with the infrastructure bill.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of very good stuff in this as proposed. Like, I mean, we'll see. You know, we'll see what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it does go bipartisan, then obviously, you know, it would get a lot worse, you know, if that's how that works. But right now, you know, I mean, it doesn't like it's, yeah. I mean, some of the, I mean, I hate that they do these things as tax credits, you know, like that's how you have to do it all. You know, you can't just give people money, you know, it has to be, stupid. The child tax credit's really good. Like that would help people a lot. You know, I mean, certainly the community college stuff, I don't think they're actually, I think it's like a little unclear, but I don't think they're going quite as far as what Biden said in his platform, which was that, you know, what community college could be free basically, but certainly a lot more support for it. And hey, I didn't think that was going to happen at all. I mean, I just thought that's like, yeah, okay, that's something that like Democrats say when they're ready for president, and then they don't actually do it, right? I mean, Obama said the same thing at one point. You know, like it doesn't, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know, when it's on the campaign trail. But there are, you know, there's a lot of good stuff here, and if it actually happened, this would be great. I mean, I think that some people maybe on the left are a little too, I mean, I don't want to downplay, you know, the efforts of my beloved grandfather, Bernie Sanders, you know, as budget chair and everything. I mean, obviously he did have a stamp on this, but like also, I think that sometimes maybe like on the left, we're a little too eager to say like, oh, we did this, right? Like
I mean,
you know, like we pressured, you know, we pressured like Biden and moved him to the left, and that's why it happened. Yeah, it's like, no, I think that there's like more spending that's at least being considered and that has already happened in some ways, just because like we're in a crazy unprecedented crisis. So like, of course there is. I mean, like even the Republican negotiating positions, as terrible as they are, like aren't, you know, they're willing to spend more money than they would have like 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it feels like when, you know, the Dems come out and they have Bernie be the face of it. Like, look, You know, we could pass something for $3.5 trillion on our own, right? Right. Which is a way of explaining to the Republicans, like, yo, y'all don't really have the upper hand here, for real. You know, I think that's what that sort of show of force is to be, is like the sicko socialist crazy commie scumbag Bernie Sanders comes out and says, I want 3.5. You guys tried to peddle this 1.2 crap. I want 3.5. I think that's, you know, it's gamesmanship on the part of the.
Yeah, so it's like we're going to say, oh, you don't, like, you're not going to work with us at all. Well, hey, I mean, you know, look, you know, hey, you know, we can just do the bill the Bernie wants, you know.
Which, you know, I love it. I love the idea that they're positioning Bernie, the Bernie-crats, as the only alternative to this bipartisan crap that they're trying to push. And, you know, I want to talk to you about this, because the bipartisan nonsense is literally what's holding it up. The cinemas and the mansions of it all. And I remember reading a tweet thread from this Washington Post homie who's like, yo, you know why this is crap? When the Republicans had control of the Senate, McConnell put stuff to a vote and was like, oh, Susan Collins, you're gonna go against this Republican thing? Let's see you do it again and again. And again, right? Like, actually put these people in a position where they have to give no votes to very important Democratic Party agenda items. Hello, that's how politics are supposed to work. Joe Manchin, you claim to be a Democrat, Kristen Sinema, and all I ever hear about is party unity and this person was on the team and blah, 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 blah. Put it to the test. How many Democratic Party item agenda items are you going to personally throw yourself in front of and still curry favor within the party? I would like to see Chuck Schumer lead. Is that too much to ask?
No, it's not. And I mean, the idea like that, oh, I mean, I understand saying that, like, what we would like to be true about, like, Manchin, that, like, he could be, there could be some, like, wonderful left-wing, you know, like, primary person who could replace him, you know, like, next time or whatever. That's probably not true. That lots of his constituents, you know, like that he's, you know, quote-unquote independent, and they, you know, might not have, like, the most progressive views on this or that issue. But, like, I don't know. The idea that infrastructure isn't going to be popular in West Virginia, like, that doesn't ring true at all.
Like, yeah, and again, you're gonna throw yourself, your body in front of the American Jobs Act,
right?
In your poor ass state, Joe Biden. I mean, yeah, excuse me, Joe Manchin. Like, this, it just seems preposterous. A lot of this, I'm not gonna lie, Ben, sometimes seems like a dog and pony show. We saw it because it kind of just is. We saw it with the COVID spending plan, where we did the dog and pony show about bipartisanship, and then it came down to, and Joe Manchin did do his tough talk about bipartisan and blah, 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 and ultimately he ended up voting for it. But then the flip side of it, Mitch McConnell goes to Kentucky and brags about a thing that he voted against and says, look, you're getting money, which is, a good thing, but it might be too much. But, like, he was so twisted, tongue twisted, because it's so obviously popular. It's so obviously what the people need and the people want. And all of these concerns about deficit and inflation is crap. It's not rooted in any data. It's not rooted in any research or empirical evidence. It's rooted in outdated economist sort of orthodoxy from the 19 freaking 70s when we had a gas shortage. And it just seems preposterous that these guys wouldn't do the obvious thing and reap the rewards of doing so obviously popular.
Yeah. Do you ever read those Rick Perlstein books?
No, I never have.
Okay, yeah. So I've been very, very slowly reading the last one. It's like, you know, it's like a phone.
That's book. Is that the Reagan joint?
Yeah, Reaganland. Okay. Yeah, that's the one. And he goes through kind of like the origins of a lot of that, like, conservative, you know, economic orthodoxy of the 70s. And, you know, basically, like, the long and the short of it is they're making shit up, you know, that they had a, like there was this guy Laffer who had, you know, this thing that became really famous, the Laffer curve, about supposedly what the relationship is between, like, you know, taxes and productivity and whatever. It's like literally something that's like not based on a study or anything. He just like wrote it down on like a bar napkin or something, and it became, you know, it became a famous thing, you know? So, I mean, no surprises there, I guess, but I mean, it is just kind of amazing to read about it all. I mean, I think that, again, whether this infrastructure bill ends up happening or not, I mean, they are going to have to, like, it's not because, like, we, you know, like, we're so amazing and influential and we pulled them left or whatever. But I mean, I think just given, like, the extent of the crisis, given how bad things are, you know, given that, like, some of the spending, I mean, like you just need, like, just for the, like, I mean, forget anything else. I mean, just to get, like, you know, the economy moving and, you know, and all that stuff, like you really do need to do some of this stuff. So I think that some of it's going to happen. I mean, I think the better question is, like, how much of this stuff becomes not just like, okay, we're going to do this for, like, you know, this year or a couple years, but, like, permanent program, right, that people can really count on, you know, that, like, to help them, you know, like, you know, year to year, you know, like, without, like, not just like to tide people over a little bit right now.
And it makes you wonder why that's not the route. I hate to get all conspiratorial about the Democrats and their leadership, but how can the route not be to put something in their hands, make it permanent and watch it grow in popularity, i.e., I don't know, Obamacare, which sucks.
Sure.
Okay. And has done nothing but grow in popularity because it's so obviously helped people.
Yeah, right.
It's so obviously helped people, and it was so unpopular at the time. But over the course of time, because you made, you know, you put mechanisms in there that forced it to be more permanent, people were just like, yo, nah, we can't get rid of pre-existing conditions. We can't get rid of, you know, keeping my kid on the insurance plan for longer than was normally the case. We can't get rid of all of this stuff, right? It's so obvious what needs to be done. And, you know, I feel like we often do these things in reverse, and it's stupid, meaning we try to come up with ways to change the hearts and minds and then be like, that now we can do policy on it. Because we won the hearts and minds of our constituents, instead of just being like, no, just do the policy and watch people get on board. It happens every time.
Totally. And I mean, like, the ridiculous thing about Obamacare was that so much of that stuff didn't even kick in for, you know, years, right? You know, after it was passed. Like in a weird way, it's almost like Obama and Biden and all those guys back then, like, you know, I mean, it almost felt like they forgot that elections existed, that they were going to have to, like, you know, win the midterms or win the next, you know, presidential, like, you know, like, it was just like, oh, we're in power forever now, so we can do this, you know, we can do this, like, complicated technocratic thing that's hard to explain, and a lot of it's not going to even kick in until, like, long after, you know, the next election. And, you know, and it'll be fine because it'll be good in the long run, you know, whereas, like, what you really want is, I mean, like you said, about hearts and minds. I mean, forget, you know, if what you want is that, like, people can see directly that you've made their lives better somehow, you know, that, like, oh yeah, right, you know, my cousin has a job now, you know, he wouldn't if you hadn't passed this thing. You know, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, about losing my health insurance now, you know, whatever, like, that's the stuff, you know, I mean, that's the stuff that's actually going to win the hearts and minds, is making, you know, is delivering, you know, delivering material improvements to people's lives, you know, I mean, that because you're going to have people vote based on all the secondary stuff, like, because they don't really believe that anything's going to change in their lives. I mean, that, you know, because, like, you might as well.
And the secondary stuff being critical race theory,
exactly, yeah,
trans bathroom bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's obvious what ends up taking the place of these bread and butter issues is the culture war crap.
No, exactly. Like, nobody's going to, like, people, I mean, look, maybe if somebody, like, there are tons of people who might, like, believe some stupid bullshit that they're told about, like, how, like, you know, whatever, like, you know, trans people, you know, being allowed to use the bathroom is going to lead to, like, whatever horrible thing it's going to lead to. There are tons of people who, yeah, maybe they'd go along with that if they're told that. I was like, oh, okay, you know, but also, like, they want to be paid more money. They want to have, like, you know, healthcare and whatever. And at least if, like, there was a clear choice, like, okay, which one do you care more about, right? Like, do you care more about the bathrooms or do you care more about having healthcare? Like, then, you know, I don't know that, like, we win every single one of those people, but, like, I think we'd get a lot of them, yeah. Right? You know, like mm-hmm. if it really came down to it, that, like, that was clearly the choice, not, like, well, I don't really think that, you know, like, a lot of people, I mean, even among Democratic voters, I mean, this is a huge problem. I mean, like, in why did Biden win the Democratic nomination? If not because people liked his policies better than Bernie. I mean, they were like every one of those states on Super Tuesday, the exit polls said that most Democratic voters wanted Medicare for all. And Biden was the only one who wasn't even, like, pretending to kind of sort of be trying to square the circle, some Medicare for all who want it thing. So, like, why did they go for Biden instead of Bernie? Well, I think most people don't really believe that anything's going to change mm-hmm. as a matter of voting, because their whole life experience is that that's just not going to happen. And so they think, well, I'm going to vote based on, like, things that are more real to me, because I think they might actually, you know, it's like, you know, if they think, you know, I mean, I think this is wrong. I think Biden just got lucky with COVID, but, like, you know, but, like, if they thought that, like, Biden was going to be, you know, a stronger candidate to beat Trump, it's like, well, okay, whether Donald Trump is president or not, that sounds like it might change, right? All this bigger economic stuff, probably that's not really going to change, because it never has. It's the same thing with, like, the UK, that, like, you know, Jeremy Corbyn could give people a Christmas wish list of, like, 20 things that all sounded great, right? And I'm sure most voters liked, you know, the idea of doing those things. But, like, bottom line, if what they took seriously was, okay, is Brexit going to happen or not, right? Like, that sounds like something that could really change. So I think that's a huge problem even for, you know, even for Democratic voters. And, yeah, I think there are a lot of people who, you know, can, like, if they basically think that their lives are going to be just as financially precarious as ever, you know, that nothing's going to change materially for them one way or the other, then, yeah, they'll hear the siren song of all this bullshit about, like, oh, they're trying to, you know, teach critical race theory to your kids, mm-hmm. you know, that the trans people are going to be in the bathrooms, you know, like,
and,
whatever.
And by the way, they're right in the sense that nobody has delivered a goddamn thing for them as far as promises. I know Barry has become a whipping boy on this podcast, but the bottom line is this guy had enormous popularity. He rode in on a huge wave of enthusiasm, and he delivered the most milquetoast agenda that was possible under those circumstances. Like, there was nothing ambitious about what he did. Nothing whatsoever. No. It was literally the most boring and scared versions of every single policy that he did, mainly Obamacare, right? Like, it was just like, oh, a big give back to the pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies, excuse me. Like, this, you know, so when the people say, yo, I saw this already, I saw this song and dance, Bernie promised a revolution. Y'all remember Obama?
Right, exactly.
Or, yeah. Hey, man, you could say to some Trump voters, you don't remember Trump cleaning the swamp, all of that? It's all bullshit, no, these guys.
Trump went to West Virginia and said he was going to bring the mining jobs back. I mean, they're actually less now than there were then.
Yeah. So, you know, I obviously all eyes are on what's going on with the infrastructure bill. Obviously, I know you're watching it closely. I just wanted to keep the listeners updated as to where we were at right now. We're still in dog and pony show mode. We're not in votes counting mode when it comes to the bipartisan stuff, or just being like, screw it, we're ramming this through via budget reconciliation. So you guys stay tuned.
Which, by the way, nobody remembers this, but they could have done that for Obamacare, get the public option.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Like that was like for like a day that was being talked about. They could have passed it through because they ended up having to pass the whole thing through reconciliation anyway. But like the excuse for ditching the public option is they didn't have the votes.
Right. We didn't have Joe cocksucking Lieberman.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, but like it was like, oh, we don't have like 60 votes for the public option. So we can't do that. We'll have to take that out. And it was like, oh, I guess we don't have 60 votes anyway, right? So we'll just pass the whole thing through reconciliation. And then, like, there was never really a good explanation for why the public option didn't go back in then. And I think Joe Biden kind of, like, you know, seemed to admit at one point that they kind of, like, given that up in early negotiations anyway, you know, which is just, like, whatever. I mean, the point, it like, I guess the only point I really make here is just that I think it's good, you know, that Biden's proposing all this stuff now. I would love for this to be passed like as is, right? You know, but like, I don't know. I guess you just like, I don't want to ever forget how much these people suck. You know, like it's not, right. You know, they're not, you know.
Never underestimate the Democrats' chance to miss an opportunity. They will always, 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 always do it. So yeah, let's stay tuned for that and keep our fingers crossed. And there's no proper way to segue into our next topic, man. But you know, we're taping this on a Wednesday afternoon. Yesterday marked the 1 year anniversary of the passing of our brother Michael Brooks, champion of leftist politics, man of the people, honestly. A guy who dedicated everything that he was doing, put all of his gifts and talents into trying to advance the cause of normal working people at every turn. You know, like I said, me and you became connected and formed a friendship via our connection with Mike. So I did definitely want to have you on. I know you were on Majority Report yesterday. Just to talk briefly about, if you will, just about Mike and his legacy and the work that he was trying to do and the lessons that we could all take from it.
Yeah, I mean, one way of connecting the two subjects is,
you know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking. But I don't want to eat something that's bad for me, like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. I love the chicken pesto bowl! Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
You saw there was something that was actually published in Jacobin yesterday, which is an article that Michael. By the way, it totally doesn't matter, but this is interesting to me that you and Nando are the only two people I know who called him Mike. Everybody else seemed to be Michael. I mean, even his girlfriend, I think, was saying, you know, always said Michael, you know, but.
I think he insisted upon it. It was just, I just don't call anybody Michael.
Fair enough. But yeah, he got, so 2 years ago, he was asked to write an article for Esquire magazine, and they didn't end up running it, you know, but it was a, the idea of the article, and this is where it connects to what we're just talking about, is that Trump had just proposed these like huge cuts to SNAP, the supplemental nutritional system, you know, basically what most people call food stamps.
Yep.
And so it was kind of a reaction to that, and it was, you know, got into some of his personal history. And I'm not totally you know, they, like I said, they kind of ended up, you know, they asked for it. They didn't end up running it. I think that it was probably like, I don't know. I think it was probably more like stridently socialist than they thought it would be, you know, like originally,
not surprising.
Not surprising. You know, I think he probably talked more shit about Democrats in there than they thought he would, you know, but But I remember, like, at the time, you know, I was, you know, I mean, I did a lot of, you know, back then, you know, like when he was writing something, you know, like I do a lot of kind of like editing and commenting, and we'd go back and forth on it. And so he was sending me that. I remember I was actually driving across country because this is when we're moving to Atlanta, but every time I get a new draft of this thing, like I'd like pull into a rest stop and read over it and send him comments, you know, because I was excited about it. And and then yesterday, you know, I don't know, a couple days ago, I was thinking about that article again, and I sent it to Bhaskar, and he you know, talked to the family and got permission, and he, you know, published it in Jacobin yesterday as like a kind of, you know, tribute on the 1 year anniversary. And in that article, you know, Michael talks like there's some very like visceral personal stuff in there that isn't really in anything else that he wrote, you know, that I'm familiar with. Like he talks about, you know, the experience of like being a kid, and like, you know, he says when you get to be about like 13 or 14 and you start to notice stuff, you know, that you hadn't really noticed before. And he, you know, get really self-conscious about being at the grocery store, when, the, when his mom would pull out the bridge card, you know, for the groceries, and, you know, and kind of being like very aware of how people were looking at them or whatever. And
Hey, I come from the era of actual food stamps where they gave you that off color money to spend at the store. Like, literally, you could see that it wasn't a dollar. It was fake money. Like, talk about ostracizing folks, man. It was so, and the money was like orange. It was like white and orange and stuff. Like, it was, I remember that distinctly, going to the store and having to pay with those things.
Yeah, right. And so, like, that's a lot of what the article is about the way, obviously, the cruelty of the Trump proposal, but also, you know, also the way that, you know, back in the era when he was growing up, and he's got some nice details in there about, like, you know, being afraid the conservatives were going to ban Howard Stern and stuff like that, you know. But he had, you know, back in that era, you know, that, you know, that was like the, when, like, the Clinton Democrats, you know, were kind of demonizing, you know, welfare mothers and all that stuff, just like Republicans. And so it's a really good, you know, yeah, it's a really good kind of piece about, you know, class politics, but you know, but also very personal. And I guess one of the things that I think of the most, I mean, obviously, you know, it's really awful on so many different levels. Like, I'm sure that you're feeling all this too, you know, that it's like, and bottom line, like, the sort of, like, first level is, it's like, you know, I mean, our friend is dead. That's incredibly sad. I mean, that's just like on a personal level, that's just awful. You know, that we all thought we were going to have decades with this guy, you know, and we didn't. But then politically, you know, in terms of media and all that stuff, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that's maybe a little connected to that, you know, that I think about, you know, thinking back to him and what he was, you know, what he was so good at and all that, is that, you know, he really, like, whether it was this kind of domestic, like, poverty stuff or the sort of sense of connection to, you know, liberation struggles, you know, in other countries, you know, he felt all of this stuff on, like, a really visceral level, you know, like this, it really, you know, like, the way, you know, everything that Lula had done in Brazil, getting to meet him and all that stuff, like, that really, like, meant something to him, like on a personal level. And so, I mean, I think he was just incredibly committed, you know, to that political project. But I think he was also, like, I think one of the things that made him distinctive, and, I mean, this is going to sound kind of funny, is just that, like, he was also just, like, really smart about how he pursued it. And he would, like, and unlike, frankly, a lot of people that I know who do this, you know, he would really think carefully about what he was going to do before he did it. Right. Okay. Is this actually advancing this, or am I just, like, reacting 'cause I'm mad, you know, which is something that I think a lot of us aren't very good at.
Yeah. 100%. I think that's the hallmark of the work that he was doing. 'Cause, you know, I was nothing but a regular lib when I first met Mike. I wasn't thinking too deeply about the divides between what working people need and the agenda of, say, the Clinton mafia, right? Yeah. They're just not aligned, you know, even though the Democrats are ostensibly what is allegedly the left party of this country, the needs of everyday working people are not aligned with the agenda of corporate Democrats. That's just is what it is. There's no two ways about that. I think what made Mike special was what you just articulated, was his ability to sort of synthesize the issue and come up with a way that people could receive the message. 'Cause, and I keep telling people this, like, there's a tendency on the left to care about who's the most well-researched, who's the smartest, who's the most right, right? Like, who's the, you know, who's the biggest, baddest brain in the room? There's a tendency to try to go that route. And completely ignore the concept of communication. Right. Effectively communicating your record, I mean your message, getting people to not want to tune you out. How do you do that? It's not by being pompous and being moralistic and being, you know, just a freaking know-it-all, right? It is by being funny and entertaining and doing impressions and coming up with characters and helping people engage with the subject matter in a way that isn't just, frankly, and I'm not trying to diss academics. Ben Burgess is my man. He's an academic. But we don't have to approach it in some strictly academic fashion. There's a way to meet people where they live. Most people will not go through graduate level courses like that. Like, we can't position our, you know, sort of ideologies and how we feel through that academic ass lens, which I think is generally the sort of position and posture that people on the left take. And I think Mike, what his genius was that he eschewed that and said, no, we got to be more plain spoken to the people. Not that he couldn't do that academic stuff with the best of them, because obviously, clearly he could. But he had such a keen understanding that in order to advance the project, we had to be more thoughtful and intentional. I know that word is a buzzword these days, but Mike was absolutely definitional of that. He was intentional about every single thing that he did. He was deliberate. And, you know, that was his favorite thing. We can't be distracted. We can't be distracted by these petty squabbles and dick measuring contests and all of that. We got to be disciplined. We got to stay on message.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that he, you know, and I mean, this is almost kind of why I want to like push back again a little about like the way that some people, like the way that they've talked about him, you know, in the year, you know, since he died, you know, they like, it's almost like, you know, there's this sort of way that I sometimes see people like portraying him, you know, like if I see like memes or something, you know, where they'll have like, I don't know, it'll be like a black and white picture, and you'll have that quote about, you know, systems and people and all that stuff. And I like what people try to do and remember all of that. But like, I don't know, sometimes I almost get the impression that some people want to make him like Saint Michael or something, you know, it's like, right. You know, like the guy, you know, like he had, you know, I mean, you know, he had as many human flaws as anybody, you know.
100%.
You know, I mean, he was, I mean, you know, he definitely had an ego and was very funny about it. I mean, look, I remember, you know, told the story that, my show, but it's like, you know, all before last, you know, I was you know, visiting a friend of mine, from graduate school, who was in, living in Brooklyn, and went out for drinks, and I invited Michael out to join us. And like, you know, my friend's wife kind of drunkenly said something nice about Elizabeth Warren, and they got into like such a huge argument about it. That was like the problem, you know, with like, you know, working out with my friend, you know, and
they, oh, you know, man.
You know, so it's like, it's not, you know, it's not like he was a bodhisattva or something. It's just that, like, it's just, he was like smart and thoughtful about what was going to help and what wasn't going to help. Like, which, I mean, I guess the reason I think it's worth emphasizing that distinction is that, like, you know, you don't have to be like a higher being or something. It's like, we could all do that, right?
Listen,
like,
we don't need gods, right? We don't need deities, right? Like, we don't need Martin Luther King to be a deity. Like, we can take what made him great and what made him one of the greatest Americans this country has ever produced, but we also don't need to send a message like, yeah, let's have like 20 different thousand chicks on the road too. Like, I don't know that we need to do that, right? Like, he's a human being. He had his flaws. Like, yeah, we wish he could have been more, you know, sort of loyal to his wife and his family, sure, and all of that. But like, that doesn't change the great things that the person does. People don't need to be, we don't need God figures. I would hope that people learn this lesson from the Obama thing, where it's like, yo, we made this guy into a larger than life figure when really he's just a man. He's just a human being. And that's no different than Mike. I think he was a great person, but that doesn't mean he was perfect or you should model your freaking life after the guy, right? No, it's just about, yo, this is a lesson of a guy who made an impact, and this is the way he went about doing it. And so, you know, we should learn the good lessons from that.
Yeah, certainly shouldn't model your time management skills after him, but I don't think I ever met him for anything about, you know, the years I knew him that he wasn't late for, you know, but I think some of what this meant in practice, you know, going back to what you're saying, is like, when he was like, you know, texting me about somebody or texting you, I'm sure, you know, like he could, like, you know, I mean, he could like talk shit about people in private, like the best of them. I mean, you know, he was, I mean, you know, again, very, very funny and, you know, and, you know, when he was doing it, but then like when he would criticize maybe even the same person sometimes on the show, right? He wouldn't do that then because he was strategic. You know, he knew that, like, just like starting one of these like weird beefs that are like half political and half personal, which is like sometimes it feels like, certainly like the far left, that's like all we've been doing since like sometime last year, you know, like that. Like he knew that that wouldn't help anything, that wouldn't advance any of the goals that he cared about, right? You know, so what he would do is, no matter how mad he was initially, you know, about whatever it is, like when he went on the show, you know, he would give like the best, most thoughtful, you know, version of the critique. He would go out of his way to try to like find things that they were right about, and, you know, that he could kind of like give credit where credit's due about. And sometimes, like, you know, sometimes some of those same people would say later that like they actually liked watching those segments because like they could tell that he'd like really like carefully listened to what they had to say. Yeah. You know, and yeah, he wasn't just being dismissive. And, you know, and he was really good at that. And he was just a genuinely, you know, compassionate person, genuinely thoughtful person. And it definitely didn't hurt that, you know, that, I mean, he was also like, you know, definitely the funniest person that I've known.
Yeah. You know, again, just the way that he would deploy his comedy in order to disarm people while also getting a point across, second to none. And I think it just spoke to his visionary nature, right? Like, and again, I'm not saying that to,
no, but it's
basically deify the guy, but like he was visionary about this specific purpose, you know, not that he was visionary in every single part of his life, but this specific mission of advancing the cause of poor and working people, he definitely understood, like, yo, we need to get different kinds of people saying the message. We need to de-emphasize the morality of all of this. We need to identify who the common enemy so clearly is. And, you know, we need to have a message of inclusion, solidarity, and not this Poindexter shit that a bunch of other people want to do that is so alienating to so many people, right? Who would otherwise be down with us. And to me, that was the guy's greatest strength, his vision for what, you know, what direction we should be taking the cause ultimately. And, you know, that's what I'll always remember him for. Of course, he was a generous guy. Of course, he was thoughtful. Of course, he cared about people. But, you know, I think what he was doing, what he dedicated his life to, just admirable in the way he carried it out. And of course, we all lost the day that we lost Mike a year ago yesterday. So thank you, Ben, man, for coming on. I truly appreciate you taking the time to do this with us. Please plug some of your stuff. Tell the people where they could find you, please.
Yeah. So write a column for Jacobin, jacobinmag.com. Host a show called Give Them an Argument. And just, you know, search for that on YouTube. I guess that's what everybody does anyway. You know, nobody really types in the URL or wherever you get podcasts. You know, wrote wrote a couple books, most recently Canceling Comedians While the World Burns. And most importantly, on the show, once a month, we talk about The Sopranos.
Yes, sir.
With you and Nando and Mike Racine. That's always like unlocked by the end of the month, but you know, give them an argument. Patrons can get it early. So it's very, going, you know, taking a really slow tour through the show. But I'm very happy to do that because, you know, going, you know, I mean, I'm sure, man, that itself makes me like, you know, like I had 10,000 conversations with the guy about that show.
Right.
Anyway, thank you so much, brother.
Of course, anytime. And that's our show for this week. We'll see you guys next week. I think Nando will be back from his European excursion by then. For Ben Burgess, for the producer, Sean, I'm Big Waz. We're out of here. Peace.